All right, so the class on Wednesday night has been doing a positive character study of people from the Gospels, and tonight's may not fit into that. We're going to talk about a man who we don't have a name for him. And in fact, we don't have a single positive thing stated about him. Nothing said that, you know, it's not like some of the other ones where Jesus says, your faith is great. Don't get anything like that. So what we're going to focus on is we're going to focus on the account and understanding what happened and hopefully lessons that we can gain from it. So hopefully it'll be fruitful nonetheless. So what we're looking at is this man who has a demon-possessed child. And what we're going to do is we're going to start off by reading two of the accounts. And I've had Michael agree to read for us Luke chapter 9, verses 37 through 45. And we're going to call this the simple account. This is where it is short and to the point. And then we'll read the Mark account, which is twice as long. It's got more details, obviously. So, Michael, let's start off. Luke chapter 9, verses 37 through 45.
Now it happened on the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, that a great multitude met him. Suddenly a man from the multitude cried out, saying, Teacher, I implore you, look on my son, for he is my only child. And behold, the spirit seizes him, and he suddenly cries out. It convulses him so that he foams at the mouth, and it departs from him with great difficulty, bruising him. So I implore your disciples to cast it out, but they could not. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here. And as he was still coming, the demon threw him down and convulsed him. Then Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the child, and gave him back to his father. And they were all amazed at the majesty of God. But while everyone marveled at all the things which Jesus did, he said to his disciples, Let these words sink down into your ears, for the Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men. But they did not understand this saying, and it was hidden from them so that they did not perceive it. And they were afraid to ask him about the saying.
All right, so that's the short version. And it does actually have some details that aren't in the other accounts. But let's then turn over to Mark chapter 9. This is where we're going to spend our time and be focused on. And I'll have then Riley read verses 14 through 29. So same account, more details.
When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, What are you arguing about with them? And someone from the crowd answered him, Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able to. And he answered them, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me. And they brought the boy to him. And when the spirit saw him, immediately he convulsed the boy. And he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, How long has this been happening to him? And he said, From childhood. And it has often cast him into fire and into water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on him, or have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said to him, If you can, all things are possible for one who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, I believe, help my unbelief. And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. And after crying out, convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, He is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had entered this house, the disciples asked him privately, Why could he not cast it out? And he said to them, This cannot be driven out by anything but prayer.
Or, Sorry. Yeah, you're good. Okay. All right. So I know not everybody got the email, got the lessons beforehand. So hopefully we're kind of all read it. We're all on the same page now. We can work on this. And then it occurs to me, we're going to go through the questions. And the first question has nothing to do with what we read. It's the context of what happened before. And Matthew, Mark, Luke, doesn't matter which one you're looking at. It's all put in the same context. What hugely significant events happened before this, before the healing of this boy? We have the transfiguration. What big important event happened before that? So now we're in Matthew 16, or it's something that's connected with the transfiguration, because in each account, the transfiguration says a few days later, whether it's 6 days or something along those lines. What happened before that was Peter came to the realization when Jesus says, "Who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am?" And that's where Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." So we've got this. The apostles know who Jesus is. Sort of. And then we get to the Mount of Transfiguration, and it's clear that Peter did not quite grasp it, because right after Peter makes the confession, he rebukes Jesus. Says, you've got the wrong plan, and what you're talking about doesn't make sense. That can't be. And then they go to the Mount of Transfiguration, and what does Peter do wrong on the Mount of Transfiguration? Yeah, it says we're going to have three tabernacles, which in Peter's mind, what's he doing? He's making them equal, which, good or bad? If to make Jesus equal to Moses and Elijah, good or bad? From Peter's perspective? That's amazing. I'm putting him on Moses' level and Elijah's level. And of course, it is not good, because then the voice of God comes and says, okay, but this one's my son. Listen to him. So we start off with Jesus up on the Mount of Transfiguration. He's not with all of his disciples. Who did he bring with him? Peter, James, and John. Anytime you say we're not with all the disciples, there's only three of them with them, the answer is always Peter, James, and John. They're the closest ones. So they are with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. They're having their own lessons, their own discussions, and as they come down, this is what they find. All right, so that gets us to question number two. When Jesus returns, who does Jesus find his disciples arguing with? The scribes.
Lawyers.
All right. What's the argument? Let's start off. What's the argument about? Well, I think we can find out what the argument is about, because they say, what are you arguing about? And say, I tried to have my son healed and they couldn't do it. So that's what the argument is about. But so then what's that? Use your imagination. What are they arguing?
The disciples aren't that good.
Yeah, I mean, look, if this man has brought his son to be healed and you guys couldn't do it, you guys don't have the power you're claiming to have, right? What's the answer to that argument? Put yourself in the shoes of one of the nine disciples. How do you answer that? Why couldn't you cast out this demon? I know what their answer to that is. What's their answer? This is going to be a long class. I can handle silence.
Firm fasting?
Did they know that?
No.
So what's their answer?
Their answer should be, we can't, but we know someone who can.
That would have been a great answer. I accept that one. That could potentially have been their answer. We don't know. That's the real answer, though, isn't it? We don't know. They don't know why they can't cast it out, but we do know someone who can. Oh, I hope that was what they said. That would be really good. I think there's enough in here to suggest that's not what they answered. But that would be really good, okay? But here's the thing. They don't know why it didn't work. Did they quit following Jesus at that point? No. You know what? They're as close to Jesus as anybody's been, and they don't have all the answers. We're not always going to have all of the answers. There are going to be things where people are going to argue with us and say, look, you guys are wrong, and we're going to be like, I don't know. But that's not grounds for quitting. Because Jesus is still Jesus. He's still the Lord. All right, so that gets to question number three, which I think we've already kind of hit. But what had the disciples not been able to do? All right, so they could not cast out the spirit. Did they think they should be able to cast out the spirit? How do we know that's the case? Because they try, yeah?
Jesus has given them authority.
Okay, so that's going to get to the next question, but I inserted a question here. You didn't see it because it's not on your paper, but it's why would they think that, how do we know they didn't? Now I don't even know what my question was. How do we know they expected to be able to? And the answer is because they go to Jesus later and ask, why couldn't we? Which means, that's implying, we really thought we could do it. Now, Emily, why did they think they could do it?
Because Jesus had given them authority to be able to do that.
Jesus had given them authority to do it, and what else? They've done it. They have already been casting out spirits. So let's go up a little bit earlier to Mark chapter 6. Verse 7, he summoned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs and gave them authority over the unclean spirits. And then we skip down to verse 13. They were casting out many demons and were anointing with oil many sick people and healing them. So they're expecting that they can do it because they have done it. Jesus has granted them authority. And here comes this guy with a demon-possessed child. They want to cast the demon out and they can't. An interesting question would be, could they have if there had been 12 instead of 9? Not because you need more, but maybe those three. They're with Jesus for a reason. Maybe those three had what these 9 did not. But it raises an interesting question. Nonetheless, they tried, they could not. Okay. So this child is demon-possessed. And if nothing else from this lesson, this part's just fascinating to me. How many of you find demons and angels to be interesting? I mean, that's a fascinating subject, and we don't get a lot about them. We do hear. Every now and then we get little hints about angels. This is kind of our hint about demons. It shows us a little bit about them. So frequently we've had other examples where there was demon possession, and it's just kind of said, demon possessed. This one's where it kind of shows us. I mean, it uses strong language to say, this is what that looked like. So what did demon possession look like for this boy?
Epilepsy.
Kind of like epilepsy. In fact, sometimes it's even translated that. Some of the translations might have said he's a lunatic, which is literally a translation from moonstruck. Don't ask me why, but they thought epilepsy was an attack of the moon. I don't get that, but that's what they thought. And so it's kind of a picture that they have. But it wasn't strong enough to say epilepsy. They don't stop with that. This is a dad who's desperate. How does he describe what his son's going through? I mean, I've got a list of different terms that he uses. What'd you say, Josh?
Basically trying to kill him.
Okay, so what's he doing to try to kill him?
Throwing him in water, throwing him in fire.
Yes. So this demon seizes, takes control of my son, and lunges him into fire or into the water. Which is a little bit more than epilepsy. Epilepsy where you just have a violent shaking. That's not so much a run and jump off the edge of a bridge. Okay? What else is going on? Barry?
He's mute.
Yeah, he can't speak, but he can scream. So we do see him screaming at some point, which is its own thing, but now he can't talk. All right? What?
Did you take that as when he has an attack, he's mute, or he's mute all the time?
I don't know. But you asked me how I take it. I don't know. That's how I take it. That I do not know that either. I don't know that there's a big difference on it. This is one thing that Luke brings out. One of the details Luke tells us is how frequently was this happening?
I think you believe spirits are real.
Well, absolutely. We're reading about them. Which I'll get back to that question in a second. But Luke adds an account, adds a little bit of detail about this son. One, he's his only son. But Luke also adds, how often was this happening? Well, it was happening basically since birth for his whole life. But, I mean, that could be the first of the month every year this has happened to him. But that's not the description. What it's saying is, if you go back to Luke chapter 9 and verse 39... Yeah, and some of the other translations will say it's not about that it hardly leaves him, but it's just scarcely, almost never leaves him. So he's almost always like this. So I don't know, Barry, on those rare occasions when he's not like this, whether he could speak or not. I don't know. That's an interesting question. I find it interesting that it wasn't constant. I mean, what's the demon doing? That it's like, I've got this boy and I'm possessing him and then I'm going to go away for a bit. Even if it's just a brief period of time, what's the demon doing? I have no idea. I should stop and ask because Patricia's made me think about this question. How do you know it's a demon? Did any of your translations say demon? What did it say? An unclean spirit, right? So how do we know an unclean spirit is a demon?
By behavior?
Not exactly. Has anybody bothered to ask that question to themselves? Or are we just all fine with accepting it, that demons are unclean spirits? Rob?
In Luke chapter 9, verse 42, it says, in my New King James Version, and as he was still coming, the demon threw him down and convulsed him.
There we go. It ends up being used interchangeably there and in other passages as well. Matthew chapter 8, it talks about the demon-possessed being brought to Jesus and he cast out the spirits. Later on in Matthew chapter 8, it talks about those two demon-possessed people that come and where Jesus casts the demons out into the swine. You remember that? In Matthew, it's demon-possessed. In Mark, it is unclean spirits. So it's just used in interchangeably. We've just kind of accepted it. If you ever wondered why, that's why, because the Bible is actually using it interchangeably. All right, so we have this demon is taking this child and throwing him into fire, throwing him into water, keeping him from being able to talk. What else is the demon doing?
I just want to repeat one thing you said. You said he screamed. It was the spirit that screamed, not the little
one. Okay, I'll accept that. But it came from the little boy. I could just, Barry, I could just imagine somebody sitting on the side saying, I didn't the kid doing that. I know it's coming from his mouth, but that's, anyway. Because that's the attitude anybody would have as they're watching this happening. Okay, so other things. It slams him to the ground. He's foaming at his mouth. He's grinding his teeth. He is stiffened. He is convulsing. He is rolling around. He is deaf and mute. He is very ill. He suddenly screams, or the demon suddenly screams. And when he does leave, it leaves with difficulty, and it mauls him as it goes. Can you imagine that as a parent? Watching that? I mean, again, I don't have kids, but I've seen, heard parents talk about how they pass out when they have to give their kids shots. Can you imagine constantly seeing your child go through this? This dad is desperate. Josh?
Ms. Shatterson thinks it's important because it goes along the same as the fire and the water. It's trying to kill it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is just awful. This is horrendous to be going through. All right, yeah, Ben.
I must have missed that. Did you say he was dead too?
Yes, in Mark 9, verse 25, Jesus refers to it as a deaf and mute spirit. As to what is meant by that entirely, I cannot say, but that's what Jesus refers to him as. Okay. Yes.
When children have epileptic fits, mm-hmm. generally when they're done, they are so exhausted they just pass out.
There is a lot of exhaustion that comes with that, yes. Yeah. I think this is a little bit more than epilepsy. Okay.
As a result, after it's over, it's similar to death because they're so exhausted they're just gone.
Right. So talking about demons, one of my challenges with it is, how do they know? Why not just say my child has epilepsy? And did they think anybody who had epilepsy was demon possessed? answer to that is no. They did not. So Matthew chapter 4, I think it's verse 24, it separates right next to each other. Jesus is healing people with all sorts of diseases. Some had pain, some had demon possession, some had epilepsy. Right next to each other. And it separates it. So it reveals one of the ways that demon possession revealed itself. And somehow they were able to discern this is not just epilepsy. This is a spirit causing this. Because it's not Jesus telling them it's a spirit. The dad says an unclean spirit is doing this to them. So they had some concept of this. And we see demons doing other things. Can you guys think of anything else that demons would do if they took a hold of a person?
Break chains.
They could break chains. We would bind them up and they'd break the chains. And nobody'd walk that way because chain breaking demon is scary. It'd chase you down. Which, by the way, how about the seven sons of Sceva? You guys remember them in Acts? They're trying to cast out these demons, and they say, "We adjure you by Jesus whom Paul preaches, come out." And the demon says, "I know Jesus and I know Paul, but I don't know you." And what happens next? They jump on him and start pounding these seven sons of Sceva, and they run out naked. Now, if you're running out naked, you got whooped. And so that's what happens. So sometimes it's not just epilepsy. Sometimes it's violent aggression. Sometimes it's totally different than that. In Acts chapter 16 is what I'm remembering. Yeah, Acts 16, verse 16. Paul casts out a demon-possessed girl, and this demon was telling the future. Not causing epilepsy, not being violent, but actually telling people, here's what's going to happen. And the master of this girl was making a great deal of money until Paul casts the demon out. And that causes its own problems. So demon possession came in all different sizes and shapes. And I don't know how, but they were able to tell this is caused by a spirit. And this is not. I don't know the answer to that, how they did that. All right, so as Jesus is talking to the Father, number seven, what does the boy's father say that catches Jesus' attention? One word. If. One small little word. If. So what did he say? If what? If you can, please show mercy. Please help. And so what does Jesus notice about that when he says if? He says there's something wrong with your faith there. I have skipped something, and I didn't want to skip this because it seems really important to me. So when this is all going on, and this poor father is dealing with this situation with his son, the disciples weren't able to cast the demon out. What did Jesus say when he found out what the argument was about? Do you remember? I don't know how I skipped this because I have a question on it. Oh, it's question number five. How did Jesus feel about this whole situation? What a faithless, unbelieving, perverted, you're not on the right path generation. And what does he say? How long do I have to put up with you? This has got to be one of the saddest statements in the Bible. Not the saddest, but one of the saddest. I'm going to put above that, "Depart from me, I never knew you." That's as bad as it gets. But isn't it awful that Jesus is on earth to save us, and he gets to a point and he says, I don't know how much longer I can put up with you. What terrible sin had they committed here?
Unbelief.
Yeah, that's not like they were doing some, like Jesus walked up on them committing all adultery or murder or stealing. They just are illustrating a lack of faith. And Jesus says, how much longer? What do we learn from that? What's that tell you? Well, it tells me that, okay, oh good. People are going to start answering. Ron and then Emily.
Well, that some people that claim to be faithful have doubts.
Yeah, let's come back to that. Let's come back to that. We're almost to that point, yes?
Well, it's not silly. It makes me question, when have I displayed this? And at what point in my life would Jesus have said that to me? So it really makes me reflect on.
Do you think there was a point in your life where Jesus would?
Oh, yeah.
Me too. I mean, yeah, it's about them, right? But this is a picture, a glimpse of we hurt God. We hurt Jesus. We do it through our sins. We do it through our doubts. Now, what's the good news about this? And then I'll get to you, Ben and Rob.
The doubt's all that bad. It makes us think.
Well, we're going to get to that a little bit, but Jesus has...
That's a good point.
Jesus has just said, oh, unbelieving generation, how long do I have to put up with you? And all that has happened is a statement of a clear indication that they didn't have enough faith. Faith is, I've said it many times, faith is crucial. I mean, we talk about we're not saved by faith only. The big mistake is if we don't say then faith is really, really important. Remember Hebrews 11:6, without it, you cannot please God. Right, Ben, what were you going to say? Sorry, I should have gotten to you earlier. Rob, what were you going
to
say?
What that comes to mind with us is long-suffering.
Long-suffering. That's the good news. Because Jesus is frustrated with his disciples. Remember, it was just before this that they had said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And now they have a lack of faith. But he doesn't quit. As much as he's frustrated at this point, he's going to go on all the way to the cross, through the cross, to the very, very end for us. So yes, it shows us the trouble we cause, but it shows he will keep going. Alex?
No, I was just going to make the observation that in all the other instances that we have studied so far is him healing and providing because of people's faith.
Mm.
And then here, so why does he do it? Is it...
Save that. Save that.
Okay.
I want to come back to that. Barry?
In the other passage, Jesus takes the opportunity to coach them and keep teaching them. It isn't... You know, I think that's really important. That
are you talking about after the child is healed? Right. Save that. We haven't gotten to that point, Ron.
Well, I think a huge point here is in verse 24, and a positive note, I believe, help my unbelief.
Hold on. You're just, all of you guys, come on. We've gone a certain far. Don't go beyond. Yeah, we're going to get to all. Rob, is it next? Okay, go ahead.
Again, I think it's just out of the two out of the three passages. I just find it's interesting that Jesus repeats it.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we sometimes see that, you know, Mark or but he says it, then he repeats it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just got to know that it's just, he almost says it and then he has to somehow say it again for emphasis.
Yeah, if you can. Gary, then we're going to have to move on.
I think it's interesting. After all of his words in 19, he says, bring him.
Bring him where?
Bring him unto me.
To me. Yeah. I mean, it was, we brought him to the disciples. Bring him to me. Which, by the way, is a lesson for us to learn about this. We don't need... what we need is Jesus. What if the disciples fail us? What if all of the disciples fail us? Should we quit?
No.
So if we want to say number 6, what positive things can we say about the boy's father? What positive thing can we say about this boy's father? What? He kept going. Even after they failed, he kept going. Because he needed Jesus. He needed what Jesus had to provide. Yes. Anything else positive you can say about this man?
He outright stated, I believe.
He does. He says, I believe, which now we'll get to this question, all right? So what does the father's... question number... let's see. Number 8, how does the father respond to this? So Jesus says, if you can, what's his response, Alex?
I believe.
I do believe and
help my unbelief.
Okay. What's that mean? Now, somebody who started on that, that was you, Ron. You started on that. Alex, I don't remember what I was holding you off on.
You don't mean ships tossed to and fro.
So what do you mean by that? What is he saying when he says this?
Keep forward. Keep your eyes on the prize.
All right, somebody else. What do you think he's saying? When he says, I do believe, help my unbelief. So does he believe or not?
He did go to Jesus.
Now he is desperate, so he may just be
desperate. But I can also make the argument, how many mountains have you seen lately? Because that's the next piece that Jesus says, right? Have your faith be as a mustard seed, and even as this mountain move, it will move. I don't see any mountains moving, so is that our same question? I think what he's saying is, I believe. I brought him to the disciples. They weren't able to do it. Help me to believe.
So I believe. Help me to believe.
I don't have another explanation why it wasn't working before.
Well, that's a whole other question, Marcus.
I think that he believes, and when he says, help me with my unbelief, I think that something, the way I look at it, is something we can also use in our lives as well. As we move forward with our belief, help me. You know, he's asking him to help me with future doubts and future situations that come up that may cause me to doubt my belief.
Yeah, so he believes, but he's struggling. I believe, but I could believe more. I believe, but could you show me? Could you prove it to me? Now, can you relate to that at all?
Yes.
I should think most of us would nod to that. That there's times when we have faith, but then we struggle. Like we believe, absolutely, God is God, the ultimate, the one who will never lie. But I'm not sure he's forgiving me. Isn't that a lack of faith? When God has promised, I'll forgive you? We're kind of wondering if he's really going to keep what he said, keep the promise, if he's going to remember us, if he really has the power. We have faith, but we're saying, help my unbelief, Alex.
To put ourselves into his shoes, I mean, I would say the same exact thing. Jesus just talked about their faith.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's going to flat out state, I believe, help my unbelief, I would be the same way, because I'm in the trial of desperation here, because this isn't just something that happened to my son yesterday. This is something that's been happening for years and years, and finally this is the pinnacle moment. Finally, I'm in front of this guy that I've been hearing so much about.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, I don't see why it's so hard to concept. It's, I would say, the same exact thing.
So one of the things that was brought up, though, is why does Jesus do it? Does Jesus say, because of your faith, I will heal him? Jesus does not make the comments like we've seen with others, with your faith is great. Nothing like that. Did you notice what leads Jesus to do it? He saw what?
He saw the boy.
Yes. Verse 25, when Jesus saw that a crowd was rapidly gathering, he rebuked the unclean spirit. When everybody else is gathering around, now there is reason to doubt, can Jesus do this? He does it. He doesn't actually ever say, because your answer was good, I'm going to do this. He says, it looks at what's going on, and he heals the boy. Now, how's that go? And if you read Matthew and Luke, it's so sanitized. He heals the boy, and the boy's good. Like, you read this account, that's not how it goes. What happens? I mean, the boy, everybody's looking at the boy saying, he's dead. He's dead. Imagine if that was where it stopped. The statement would be, Jesus has power to cast out a demon, but not the power to save the boy's life. So it's very important that Jesus then takes the child, brings the child up, and now the child is fine and healthy. And what did Jesus say about to the demon? Jesus did not just say, get out. He added something to it. Get out and never come back. Remember, this child was having intermittent. Even though it was constant, there was intermittent where sometimes the demon would leave and the demon would come back. And now Jesus has said, never again. Never coming back. So the boy is healed, and he is healed completely. Yes, go ahead, Alex.
I think Emily had a good point there of the fact that Jesus saw him. I mean, there's times when Jesus has done things just straight out of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Like earlier in Luke, I think there was this boy's funeral where he's walking by, and Jesus had compassion. Nobody asked him to. He just did it because he had that compassion. So I think there's validity to when he physically sees this boy that would be a driving motivation.
Certainly, and that's what furthers the conversation. He sees the boy, he sees what's going on to the boy because he has one of those fits while they're there. But when it comes to actually having healed him, this is what leads to what. So much that I'm missing. You ever, those of you who've been teaching, you ever been looking at saying, all right, I'm not going to have enough material.
That's why I was trying to answer the question before you got to.
Barry, you're so smart, I should have listened to you. Okay. So the boy is healed, and the question is asked, and we're not going to take the time now to read Matthew's account. Matthew really adds to this point when the disciples then come and say, why couldn't we do it? And this is what Josh was talking about. This is the part where Jesus says, if you have faith of a mustard seed, which tells you what about the disciples?
They're drinking milk.
They didn't cast out the demons. What does it tell you about the disciples? Their faith was smaller than that. No wonder Jesus was so frustrated. Saying, you don't have to have a ton of faith to have a ton of power. But you guys didn't even have that much. That's what it reveals about the disciples, what Jesus says. What does it reveal about demons, what Jesus says? When he says, this kind can only come out with what? What has he just revealed to us about demons? There are different kinds. What else did he just reveal about demons? There's different power. And he's saying, this one was not an easy one. This is a hard case. That's fascinating to me. What did it reveal about God, though?
That he's kept strong.
Still can. No matter how strong they get.
Why do they take the word fasting out? I think fasting is key.
Well, because they can only do what the text says. And it's only Matthew's account that says this kind can only come out with prayer and fasting. And there's serious question as to whether that was originally in Matthew or not. So even though I agree fasting is key, fasting is an exclamation point to prayer, you can't just put it in because we like it. We want it to be there. So it's not included in the Mark or Luke accounts, and it's questionable as to whether that should be included in Matthew's account. All right, so this idea of being able to cast out demons, number 11, that's significant. I mean, imagine having the power to overcome this sort of thing. And Jesus is saying, you guys can, but what should they focus on? Because they go off on a mission, and they are casting out demons, and they are coming back to Jesus saying, look at what we can do. What's Jesus say they should focus on instead? Focus on your salvation. I've never cast out a demon, but I've got something better. We should all remember the fact that it's better to be saved. It is better to have your name in the book of life.
Oh. You know that you've never cast out a demon.
Well, there wasn't a lot of yelling. I'm pretty sure you don't accidentally cast out demons like that. Pretty sure. I've never seen a scripture and the demon accidentally fell out.
Something God's asking.
Yes.
Why don't we have miracles because everybody would grab on to miracles if we had them today.
That's a great question. I don't have the answer to why we don't have demons today. I have a few possibilities, one of which is we might have run out. When Jesus was casting them out frequently, there was a talk of being thrown into the abyss, being thrown into a place with lock and key, can't do anything. It's possible we simply ran out of demons. There's a prophecy in the Old Testament telling us that there would not, that there was going to be a temporary time. Honestly, if there was a demon possession today, I think we could cast them out. I think the power remains, which is something really significant about this passage that I do want to get to and then wrap it up. What did Jesus say? If you can, if you believe, what? That's not what he says right here. You're skipping ahead and over to Matthew. Stick to Mark. What's he say right here? All things are possible to those who believe. That is in the context of a demon-possessed child with the worst case. He's saying, you guys can do it if you believe. If we believe, we can move mountains. If we believe, we have access to the power of God. And that is for all of us. And that's an encouraging message. Now, here's what happens right after that. Right after that, all three accounts, the next thing Jesus tells them is, I'm going to Jerusalem and they're going to arrest me. Isn't that fascinating? Right after he has just shown, I have the power over the demons that no one else in the world has, and I'm going to fall into the hands of men. And you know what the next thing in all three accounts happens next? All the disciples wonder which one of us is greatest. Isn't that sad? Okay, so watch your faith, because faith really, really matters. That's about as much as I'm going to get from this lesson. I guess I'm out of time. I had plenty of material and some. All right, thanks, Nick.
I'm sorry for something like that, but I just...